Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. Buena mi gente, Machete Mate here with a special edition, special treat for y'all and especially for us. I'm Leroy and of course the homies T.
What's up? How's it going, y'all?
And of course Austin.
What is up, my people? Back at it again.
Yeah, you already know. If you've been paying attention and following along with us, you're aware that some serious shit has been going down in Bolivia since November and has ratcheted up in the last few weeks. I mean, shit has been going down in Bolivia for over 500 years, but that's beyond the scope of today's show. But today, we have the privilege and pleasure of having on the show to give us some valuable perspective, comrades who live and breathe the struggle of their homeland and do fantastic work in the DMV area in the U.S. I'm talking about El Colectivo Causai. Welcome to the show, fam. How are we doing?
How's it going? Great. My name is Luis. Grew up in Bolivia, La Paz. Came here to the States, to the Virginia, to the DC area when I was 12. And after that, I just grew up over here, in between just the outskirts of DC. I think just happy to be here. Thanks for having us. Also, I'm part of Causai, like you mentioned. I also do some other mutual aid that happens around this area. For a living, I guess I'm an educator. So yeah, that's that. Like I said, thanks for having us here.
Hi, and my name is Mauricio. I'm born and raised here in the DMV area. I lived in Virginia all my life. Now living in DC. And you know, in Arlington, like, it's kind of like the center of like the Bolivian community here in the United States, but yeah, thanks for inviting us, and happy to be here.
Hey everyone, this is Yair. Thank you both of y'all for having us. Yeah, I'm living out here in DMV, like you said, doing some work, and yeah, just shout out to y'all for having us.
No, we're super stoked for you agreeing to do this. And quick, a shout out to a mutual comrade, friend of the show, who put this together. We're not going to say your name, but you know who you are, and mabuhay, man. Beautiful. With that said, we'll just get straight into it because we have a couple of things to cover. Hopefully we have a colorful and engaging conversation. It's going to be huge for us, especially because we are going to be beginning our deep dive into the Bolivian Constitution 2009. So hopefully to gain some really, really good valuable perspective in this and to help us guide us as we do that and do it proper justice. But with that said, we'll just get straight into the interview. If Austin, if you want to take it away.
Absolutely, more than happy to get us started here, Leroy. And first, you know, I just want to I guess myself take the opportunity to thank you all so much for being here on the podcast with us today. As you all mentioned, you're located in the DMV area, generally speaking. Myself and T, as I'm sure a lot of people listening know, are also based in the DMV area. And I can say that at least for, I think since you all formed, I've definitely seen some of the things that you all have done with different groups in the area, and I've definitely been very impressed. So I'm definitely, once again, I am honored to have you all on this podcast with us. So first question, relatively straightforward one, but definitely one that I'm interested to know a little bit more about, and that's just who you all are, right? Who is Colectivo Causai, right? And how exactly did you all get started?
So Colectivo Causai is a group of primarily Bolivians, but we'll get into like what Bolivia means in a little bit as we explain kind of like who we are. But Colectivo Causai came together in the wake of the coup, the Evo Morales coup last year in late 2019. And that really, with that came a lot of anxiety, came a lot of frustration, a lot of anger, because we've seen this happen before in Bolivia. Yep. And we came together in the midst of this. It was great to come together, but unfortunately it had to come from, you know, this coup. And then as we were upset, as we were kind of like trying to figure out what to do, that's how we formed, and that's how we found each other, and started organizing, doing some solidarity work here, for the people over there in Bolivia, all the indigenous campesinos, working class folks. And then some of the things that we've done is, you know, I don't know if you've heard of this guy named Luis Fernando Camacho, who was an instigator of the coup last year. He came over to DC. Yeah, it's this guy is the worst, man. But I mentioned like Panama Papers and whatnot, and he came here, and you know, we were just like, we can't let this happen. So we organized this event along with another community group in Virginia, and you know, that's where we brought truth to power. And we were able to uplift the voices of many Bolivians, many people who were murdered, massacred, because of this man, because of all the hate that he incited, all the violence that he incited. And that's just a part of the solidarity work that we've done, in order to try to maintain and uplift like indigenous working class, indigenous people. That's just a little bit of what we are. And as you'll come to see, like there's deeper complexities when it comes to what Bolivia, what Bolivianos, Bolivianex mean, and what like how that all comes to connect with each other when it comes to like our collective.
Yeah, super dope.
Sorry, real quick, I just have to say once again, being us all. Except for Leroy, that is, being generally from the DMV area, it's not too uncommon to have some real heinous motherfuckers like Luis Fernando Camacho come through, right? OAS is in DC, right? There's always foul motherfuckers walking in and out of that building. But yeah, I do just wanted to say I remember when that happened and thought it was awesome at the time. So you all kick ass. Anyway, passing it over to Leroy here.
Yeah, so I'll take the next one. I guess within the general notion of people's idea of what Latin America is, especially among gringos and even among a lot of Latin Americans, like Bolivia is this sort of random South American country that people know exists, but people don't know a lot about it. Recently, there's more consciousness around it, which is good. But can you just talk about what and who Bolivia is? Like when you say Bolivia, what are we talking about?
Yeah, when we talk about Bolivia, and you know, Jose Luis and Ma can get into this a little more, but when we talk about Bolivia, you know, as Bolivia stands now, for what it is, it's like, you know, colonized borders is what it is right now. But if we look at Bolivia's name right now, you can see that its name change, there's a new name, and it's called the Plurinational State of Bolivia, which was adopted by the Evo Morales administration at the beginning of his term. So to us, that's kind of like an acknowledgement of the many, many indigenous nations that exist in Bolivia, but also in the exterior of Bolivia. We're talking about Peru, Chile, Argentina, because we have Quechua, Guarani, Aymara brothers and sisters and relatives that exist. And so, you know, the border crossed us, so to speak, right? So if we're talking about like what is Bolivia, that's what like, you know, quote unquote, like Bolivia is right now. It's a colonized state that is moving towards, or was moving towards, indigenous liberation within its current structure of the colonial imperialist, or what is now, what is like the growing imperialism of the U.S. in the South American context. But that's what we're talking about. And also, not only that, but Bolivia is and does have communities of Afro-Bolivianos, you know, of who mostly reside in the Yungas, but do exist in other parts of Bolivia. So Bolivia is also, you know, including like Afro-Bolivians who came here through the slave trade. But that's just like kind of that. When we talk about Bolivia, that's what we're talking about. I don't know, Jose Luis or Mao, if you want to add a little more to that.
I mean, yeah, It's a tough question when it comes to kind of figuring that out. But it you know, some Aymaras or some Quechuas, they don't consider themselves Bolivians, right? So one of the examples is Michael, for example. Felipe, he's been in the news for lately, but he's like a, you know, the Catarista guerrilla from, you know, and his movement was always been about having his own, you know, having the Aymara nation. So, yeah. And, you know, personally, that's the way that I would think about it. You know, I think that does justice for the indigenous people over there, the different nations. Of course, with this new government, with the Mas government, there was some progress towards that, but not as much as we would want to towards that end. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm glad, Jay, that you brought up the Afro-Bolivians, because me personally, being of Afro-Puerto Rican descent, like, when we covered the Bolivarian Constitution, one of the things that we talked about was the failure to recognize Afro-Venezuelans as part of the Venezuelan nation, Venezuelan project.
Yep.
And in the Bolivian Constitution, Article 2, Article 3, straight away, with the tiny Afro-Bolivian population that there is, they made the effort to actually acknowledge the community, which is massive, which I'm sure had, to a certain degree, influence on the general, I guess, mainstream Bolivian culture, just for lack of a better term, which is massive. And for a bit of context, I think, Luis, you were talking about Felipe Quispe, right? Who's really, really militant. Like, he's, yeah. If you're not familiar with him, check him out. Badass dude. One of the biggest influences with the whole Cochabamba water war and the gas wars. Really, really fascinating dude. And he doesn't mess around. He's really about what he's about, which is massive. We'll pass it on to you, man, for the next question.
Of course, thank you. And also, you know, I'd like to extend my personal thanks to you all for coming on. It's a real honor, and we're very grateful that you are our first interview guests on our show. Now, you've already mentioned the Cataristas. You've mentioned Mas and Evo Morales, of course. In that light, you know, I was wondering if you could explain a bit about some of the social movements and working class and indigenous institutions that exist in Bolivia and their relationship with Mas and Evo in particular.
Okay. So there's a lot of things, you know, it goes back and forth, obviously, like with anything, there's different versions, depends on who's saying it or what's going on. But from what we've been able to see, obviously, there's been at the beginning of the terms of with El Mas, there was a lot of movements that were obviously all the social movements were about it, right? Because he was about indigenous rights, socialism, and it was a great relationship. But you know, towards like second, third term and things like that, it's like there was some criticism. Right. And they were able to voice that criticism. And so it wasn't like a perfect relationship. But that's normal within any democratic, I guess, government where there's back and forth. So there was that. So I know sometimes you hear that, you know, the social movements were all for Mas, and they were always like behind it, like 100% when no matter what they did. But that's not the case. You know, there was always a good amount of criticism over some things. But the main thing is that those same movements, they don't want to be thought of as like for what happened with the coup and things. They don't want to be thought of they took advantage of them to be able to, you know, put a right wing government in there. And that's how some of the social movements look at it right now. You know, it's like, you know, they took advantage of the criticism that we had it, and they just took that and you know, so that's one of the some relationships that were there at this point. I mean, yeah. Yeah. Any other questions about that, specific ones, or anything else you guys want to add to it?
I mean, like, also, like, under Evo, like, you know, it was, like, a healthy relationship, you know? There's legitimate concerns, like, around concerns, like, about El Lago Popo, that, you know, people felt like, you know, Evo didn't do a good job of protecting it. But, you know, people were allowed to raise the concerns, you know? Now under Janine, you know, you say anything against them, they throw you in jail. I mean, like, even someone who, like, makes memes, like Suchi on Facebook, she's, like, a content creator. She was thrown in jail. You know, like, you can't do memes now. So, like, we've gone from, you know, good relationships to, like, censorship, suppression, and so.
Yeah, and also the reality of it, too, was that, like, Jose Luis and Mauricio, yeah, people were allowed to, you know, demonstrate. And, you know, there were points when they were heavily contested, but nowhere close to how they compared to what the past 10 months, 9 months have been like. You know, when we're talking about the massacres that are being orchestrated, when we're talking about people being attacked by right-wing militias, like the RJC or the Unión Juvenil, which, you know, are militias, are militias led by right-wing young people who have money. But also, like, kind of going back to when people were allowed to demonstrate under the Evo Morales administration, when there was heavy contention, you know, oftentimes the right wing would use that as a way to hijack that movement.
Yeah.
Just really kind of be like, look, this is what's happening. This is our movement now, and that's not in any way was the social movement resistance, whenever there was a resistance against Evo, it was no way an endorsement for right wing fascism, for right wing conservatism, and that's what the right wing tries to do, is like, okay, they're endorsing us since they're being critical of Evo, that means they're on our side, and that's what they keep on doing. So that's also one thing that, like, I would like to highlight, is a pattern, in the right wing when we're talking about those relationships.
Yeah. Thank you so much for those responses. I think it's important for us, you know, especially our listeners based in the United States, largely, it's important to understand the nature of the social movements, how they both, you know, they work obviously for their, you know, for their own base of support. So they had criticism, you know, of Evo Morales, but they also obviously opposed the coup government. The difference, of course, is that one government was more responsive versus one that is trying to repress them. So I think, you know, that is a very interesting distinction that has to be made, and I thank you for that. I'm going to send it back over to Leroy.
Yeah, and just quickly on that, if I'm not mistaken, Evo always called his government the government of social movements, and that the whole plan was to govern from amongst the people, so be responsive to everything that was being said. And because we have a habit of quoting Mao, it's all about that self-crit, taking that criticism, internalizing it, and then putting out a better policy, putting out better practices to be more responsive to the constituents and to the people. But yeah, so on the show, we skew quite Bolivarian in the idea of sort of a more united sort of Latin America. And we talk quite a bit about Latin American integration. What is your, I guess, as individuals and the organization as a collective, the perspective, especially given the plurinational indigenous demographics in Bolivia, is there a sense of identification with the region as a whole?
Yeah, so as a group, as like Colectivo Causai, you know, this is something that's still a work in progress, because although it's something that is like a foundation of our group, it still comes with complexities, because there's so much to unravel, right? There's so many challenges, but also so many great things to be found. So I know, like, personally speaking, for me, in terms of like an identification with the region at large, yeah, most definitely. I would think if we were to really strive for like Latin American integration, it would have to be one that's purely like indigenous led.
Yeah.
The voices of indigenous people being the ones that are, and maybe like, I don't want to say controlling, but I want to say the most influential.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think of when I think of like the regional identification. I identify with the land, and with the land of the people, and the original people that come from that land. So that would have to be the first thing for me in order, if I was going to identify with South America, Latin America, you know, always identifying with the original people of the land, and then the land itself, before that. Kind of like in my eyes, I'm thinking like the Iroquois Confederacy. You know, there we have multiple nations, multiple languages, and different practices where people were able to be united. And, you know, again, that was like that's what the Constitution was based. That's what the United States was based off of.
Yeah, that's right.
Iroquois Confederacy. And that was like the true indigenous unity right there that really brought power and peace. So if that's what we're striving for, then I think that would have to be, for me, the first thing is like indigenous voices at the helm. And Jose and Mao, I know this is a question that we're all kind of like really passionate about, just as we're rooted in our work. So I'll let them take the mic.
There's always talk and from different angles when it comes to that, right? I mean, there's the Bolivar dream, you know, that he wanted to unify Latin America, South America. Then there's the, you know, socialists that, you know, talking about working class, everybody should unite behind those things. But you know, it's up to me. It's more of a it's like who was there first, and then make sure that they get what's theirs, you know, all the land that was stolen, all the language, all their stories and things like that. And before, you know, that we could think of, you know, something that's unified, that would have to be addressed first, yeah. You know? Yeah.
For me, you know, like I agree with it in spirit, especially, you know, like coming it from like a grounded principle of eliminating all borders. You know, for me, you know, borders only have been used as a door to racism, to criminalization, to oppression, you know. At the same time, I understand how when people say that this is an open invitation for more colonialism, you know, and you know, I feel that, but colonists have always, you know, said like, oh, this has been open. There's always been an open door for them, apparently, to them, right? And just like saying that's like, no, fuck that, you know, like if it's gonna be this way, then like it's gonna be this way all the way, you know. It's not just like on your terms, you know. And that's where I'm coming from my heart, you know. So. But yeah, that's just how I feel.
No, super dope. And personally, the way I approach the question is, I'm all for a united Latin America, but without the sort of stain of the concepts of like mestizaje and Latinidad, right? Because those two concepts only serve to sort of erase the actual plurinational, to use the vocab word of the day, nature and spirit of the region. So just to completely echo what Jair said, like it has to be indigenous led. It has to be with the indigenous voices and their, like, you know, their perspectives at the front and center, and everything needs to be built around that. And then we work to a better sort of understanding of each other, better community, better mass community of the entire region. But yeah, so.
Can I add something real quick, Leroy?
Yeah, man, go ahead, for sure.
Like Latin American integration, you know, I was just thinking of that word, like Latin America, and like, even that has its border, right, between like North America and Latin America.
Exactly, exactly.
And then thinking about like the really like the indigenous perspective of it, of including like our brothers, sisters, and relatives in the North, right? Not just like the U.S., Canada, but Canada and Alaska, you know, being that extension of the U.S. But kind of like at the helm, you know, we're looking at indigenous people from the North of the Arctic refuge to all the way down to Patagonia. So even taking it a further step of thinking past like Latin American integration versus like maybe like indigenous, like I don't want to say indigenous unity, but like an indigenous confederacy or something like that, right? Like just that would be like the, I think that would be like the ultimate vision about these things. Because yeah, again, like we can look at the great example of the Iroquois Confederacy and what they accomplished.
But don't call it the American Confederacy, because then people might think something else. You
know? Yeah, you boys from VA are very familiar with that.
We might think.
Nah, super, super dope. Thanks for that. Thanks for that. Because I think that's probably one of the more contentious questions and ideas within Latin America, and especially people with a diaspora and identifying as Latino, what that means. So it's super dope that we can get different perspectives on what that means from quite disparate sort of backgrounds as we all are here. But with that said, we'll pass it on to T with next question.
Really quick, just to, you know, throw my two cents and on this question, it's interesting to me that the concept of plurinationality, the plurinational character of Bolivia, seems to have is the perfect answer to the question, you know, the big debate over, you know, universal movements versus more particular movements, and the plurinational idea is a way to kind of integrate the best of both worlds. But my next question is really the subject at hand, and that's got to be the coup. If you could tell us some of the, you know, what are the origins of this coup? Some argue that it's entirely explained by domestic interests. Others claim it was, you know, entirely manufactured in D.C. Was it a combination of the two? Just give us, if you could, a rundown of what the origins of the coup were and kind of how it's playing out. Because from our end, it seems like the right wing is even divided among themselves down there. And so we're just a little curious. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah, yeah. First of all, you know, like, which coup, though, you know? Because, like, coup after coup after coup, especially in Bolivia. You know, it's definitely the two, you know, I can't like point to a document and be like, here, the CIA's game plan down there, right? But like, we know like history, we know CIA's involvement in Bolivia with Operation Condor, you know, that put Banzer into power in Bolivia, you know, and he himself just like going into the countryside, killing indigenous people. We know that. We know that since the day that Evo took took office, that people in the right wingers were saying like, no, he's illegitimate. No, I'm working against them. You know, in 2006, you had the creation of the Media Luna, and that they're basically like, no, like autonomy. You know, like we're gonna be like our own Bolivia too. You know, or something like that. And you know, like people want to play dumb that like those things didn't happen, like Camacho wasn't there, you know, in 2006 and prior, you know, organizing right wingers, violent takeover of gas facilities and then Denny. People want to play dumb like oh, he wants to say like, oh, this is for democracy, this is nonviolent action. I was like, no, you know, we remember, you know. It definitely has its roots, and it's in racism that has existed in Bolivia since it started. But we also know that, you know, like Elon Musk even told you like, oh, we coup whoever we want, right?
Yeah.
We know there's a lot of interest in play here, so you know, yeah. Especially also like the Bolivians that come here to come here, and like escaping, you know, like. Like set on persecution, someone said. They live here in Virginia, Maryland, with mansions, and I don't know, it's just BS. So we know that Americans are looking after them. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like Matt did a really good job of just kind of explaining like the relationships and how people from this side benefit from a lot of actions going on over there. In Bolivia that are consistent of the wealthy class. And so I know Mao mentioned like Media Luna, and I also kind of want to throw out a name Branko Marinkovic. If you know who that is, definitely like look him up, like for all the listeners out here. But yeah, he was one of the orchestrators of this Media Luna. So Media Luna refers to the eastern side of Bolivia. So when we're talking about Media Luna, that's kind of like you'll see like it's like a half moon, right? If you look at it on a geographical map, which consists of Santa Cruz, Beni, Pando, and Tarija. And this coup that happened last year has been like a coup in the making. It wasn't just like, okay, you know, we're going to do this coup in like a month or within a couple weeks. No, this has been in the making since the first indigenous president was democratically elected. And we see this at the beginning of Evo's administration, where, again, going back to Media Luna and like the unrest in 2008, where there was, again, yeah, like Ma was saying, this call for autonomy, where these right wingers were taking over natural gas infrastructure and government buildings. And then when Evo would come into these regions, he would be met with hate. But for his supporters who did come, you know, there's records of people, like I believe it was like six or seven campesinos who came to greet him. They were met with right-wing militant groups who then kidnapped them, paraded them, and then kind of like just as like part of like a show, as a display, they had them stripped down and basically denounce Evo as their leader. And I forget what report this is in, but I can definitely share this report. And that's just an example of the different things that happened. And kind of even going even further to that, you know, we can look at the other right-wing militia groups. One of them is Eduardo Rosa. I don't know if that name rings a bell, but he was a member of the neo-Nazi group called the Zenga Unit, who took part in the ethnic cleansing in the Balkan Wars. So there was a relationship there already of like ethnic cleansing, racism. And then we also have this other member of the right-wing groups called, his name is Tibor Deves. And he was the founder of the Sekeli Legion. And he was also like responsible for conducting these like training like camps for people who were right-wing, just like focused militant. And that group was, he was from Hungary, or that group was based from Hungary, but he brought that all over here. Into, I forgot what region it was, but definitely in the eastern region. And then one thing that was really unfolded in this first coup attempt of the Media Luna was that they found, I believe they found like a lot of ammunition. They basically found, they unfolded like so many things, like, okay, they were looking to assassinate Evo and start a coup. And this doesn't get told, but that name, Branko Marinkovic, he's still in play now. Agnes just actually gave him the role of, I believe, the Minister of Planning, El Ministerio de Planificación. So we can see how these connect. It's not a coincidence that this guy now has this role when it comes to the right. And again, like Ma was saying, you know, Camacho was there when this was all happening. They were all there. So they've all been like constructing, orchestrating things when it comes to like media, when it comes to hijacking social movements, protests or criticism of Evo. So this has been like orchestrated, and the funding, right? When we look at the funding, the funding didn't come from anywhere. If you look at Camacho's Twitter account, you can see that his Twitter account went up within the 3 weeks before the coup, as he started to grow in prominence as the coup leader, so to speak, or one of the coup leaders. So I just wanted to throw that in there and how these coups are connected to each other. There's so much more, y'all. There's so much more. But yeah, those are the relationships between those coups. And you can see how the right wing has a relationship with the U.S. Embassy and why the U.S. Embassy was then kicked out of Bolivia because of its role in this violent, oppressive actions against indigenous working class people.
And like, if you even look on Camacho's, you know, Facebook page, you see him and like him hugging Branko, and he's like, oh, you know, my brother, you know, who lived in exile, he was here in the U.S. for a moment before going down to Brazil, you know, basically waiting for the moment to come back to Bolivia. But he's like, oh yeah, my brother, you know, he's well, someday we'll see each other again. And both these folks are associated with a group called Convite Cívico Pro Santa Cruz. And that group, since the start of it, has been right wing. The founders were ex-falangistas, and they basically like started this group in order to basically like rake in more money from the gas industry, you know. They're also associated with all the motocicletos and like the folks that are like on bikes, you know, beating people up left and right. And you know, like it's nothing new, you know, like the right wing down in Bolivia has been organized since the 50s. It's known like that literal like Nazis love them, and you know, they just carry on the tradition until today.
Yeah. And the youth group that Mao was talking about, the RJC, is I believe it's a Resistencia Juvenil Cochala. So you can definitely like look them up for the folks that are listening. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like juventud groups, you know. Well, like Comité Cívico Pro Santa Cruz was initially like a student-led group, right? And Camacho, but it broke off into these juvenil groups, which Camacho like kind of like was entered through that like ladder, right, system. But RJC, that's in Cochabamba, which is you know, not in the east, which where Santa Cruz is, but you know, it's still like the same like, you know, concept.
Who have active members in Virginia, actually.
Who brag about going down to Bolivia and riding a bike just to beat people up.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So it's something I just wanted to throw out there is what the similarities between a lot of these like the way the look and the behavior and the attitudes and the things that they say from Bolivian neo-fascists and fascists and US-based fascists is, it's kind of remarkable. Not only, you know, it's a reminder that not only is our struggle international, but our enemies, they also see it in international terms. So absolutely, that is very interesting. And yeah, I just want to remind everyone that these people have a presence in the United States. So, you know, be aware.
Yeah, and just quickly, I think when we talk about all these things, especially in the context of a colony that still exists like Bolivia, we have to talk about power, right? So for its entire history, not only Bolivia, but across Latin America, you had a very cross-section of society who had all the power. We're talking about like that Criollo Mestizo group that no matter, they could talk about, you know, we're all one Bolivia, we're all one Ecuador, we're all one, whatever the border constraints are, but was never the case. So now you have an indigenous president of Bolivia. That is something that the people who were the traditional stewards of power cannot handle. That is the basis of all of this. You know what I mean? Not to say that they aren't odious no matter what, but this was sort of a signal to them because look, we're losing control, we're losing power. We have this freaking Indio here, you know, taking our power away from us. And it's like Evo used to say that the phrase was mi pecado es el indio or something like that, ser indígena or something like that. So my only sin is being indigenous, and largely that's true. And I think we talked about Bolivar quick, like just before. One thing to remember as well, within Bolivia, I'm pretty sure the same case in other parts of South America, when he wrote the constitution, he separated Bolivian nationality and Brazilian and Bolivian citizenship. So anyone within the borders, yep, they're a Bolivian national. But to be able to exercise a certain level of citizenship, so be able to vote, take part in government, all that, you still have to be a criollo mestizo landowner. You know what I mean? So indigenous people were systematically written out of having rights and having power for its entire history. So,
yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about that stuff, it's is exactly it's dead on, you know. Like from what I remember, you know, when I was growing up over there, that was all of that, you know. Like I came when I was 12, but I remember that very vividly, all the racism, you know, all the stuff about you looking a little bit indigenous, and they would just shut you down. You couldn't speak. There was no speaking your language. How that was erased on the schools. For 14, you know, for the amount of years that the mosque was in there, it was building up. You know, the right wing, like you're saying, it's their privilege, you know, was like slowly going away, and they were seeing that. Yeah, I mean, one of the most obvious things for me was when it was happening, like everybody that was for it, like, you know, the stuff that we're sharing, or who was sharing it and all that, it was just mostly like middle class white, and it was so obvious. Everybody, almost everybody that was sharing that stuff and that were for the coup, it was just middle class white, you know. And that so to me, it was pretty just off the bat, it was like, you know, right without even doing too much digging right there, you know. And I was like, no, this is horrible, you know. It's like, and they would say something like, oh yeah, it's a pretty diverse opposition. And I was like, where is that at? He was like, I couldn't see it, you know. I couldn't see that. And that is one of their things that they always used to say, oh, it's pretty diverse, everybody's complaining. And it's like, wait, how? Because yeah, everybody that I saw sharing and everybody looked like rich, middle class, or white, you know. Like so that along, it was like red flag, you know, to me right away. It was like, what's, yeah. So yeah, that's why I just wanted to add that in there. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you said, Machete, you know, in regards to, you know, like voting rights. It wasn't until the 50s that indigenous people got the right to vote. And even then, you know, not all indigenous peoples got the right to vote, but, you know, and this is in a country with majority indigenous population.
Exactly right.
And then also one quick thing to add, you know, just like Afro-Bolivians weren't even mentioned in the census and up until the Evo administration.
Yeah.
And the first I believe it was the first Afro-Bolivian person was elected into Congress under the Evo administration.
Dope.
No, yeah, that's very interesting. And a lot of the things that you've all talked about are so important to the struggle, not just in Bolivia, but throughout the Americas, internationally, right? Like, I wish leftists in the United States, or leftists in the global north more broadly, I should say, could recognize how Bolivia has been sabotaged at every turn, right? Since it's fucking exists, since it first started to exist, right? You talk about La Media Luna, right? Even before Evo even had a chance to really even do anything systemic, it was just, no, fuck you, we're out of this country, you know? Just sabotaging them and the indigenous, sabotaging MAS and the indigenous at any chance, any turn they could. And the biggest reason that they've been able to persist and continue to persist is because of those institutions we touched upon, which were rooted in the indigenous people and rooted in the lower classes of Bolivia. And I wish leftists in the United States or in the global north recognized that and championed those examples and uplifted those examples, rather than looking at like Scandinavian social democracy, which is based on third world exploitation, right?
Exactly.
You know, we look at those examples in Europe or elsewhere and uphold them as, or I should say certain people do. They uphold these examples as, oh, you know, this is good social democracy or whatever. Man, get the fuck out of here, right? We need to be looking at places in the global south and championing those movements. But anyway, before I get on a wild rant here, like I said, I've definitely learned a lot from you all. But I do have personally one more question here, and it's a simple one, but also an important one, and that is, what can people in the USA do to support you all, to support the people back in Bolivia? Please let us know.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because, you know, oftentimes that's what people find themselves asking. It's like, well, what can we do to support? What can we do to make an impact? So some of the work that we've been doing is supporting mutual aid groups over there. You know, it's hard time during the pandemic, so they're fighting multiple battles, just as we're battling multiple battles here in the U.S., right? So over there, since we've been supporting or helping out the mutual aid groups, you know, definitely checking those out and following us on Instagram or on Facebook, Colectivo Causai, Colectivo Causai, Kawsay. Where, you know, we have ongoing fundraisers just to show some solidarity and support for those groups over there that are working really hard. And are one of the most vulnerable groups being impacted right now by the mismanagement and mishandling of the Agnes regime that wasn't really elected into power. And that's just one thing. And then a few more things as far as like social media goes, right? Be staying in tune, staying aware. Some media handles to follow is Radio Causa Chun News.
Yeah.
So it's just like radio and then Causa Chun spelled K-A-W. Sachun. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, looking them up. And then also another one is Resistencia Bolivia. You know, you can Google that on Instagram or on Twitter. Another one is Sendero Huipala, Senderowhipala. Another one, really amazing journalist, just doing really amazing groundwork, is Alina Duarte. I don't know if you all have heard of her. Amazing, amazing journalist. And her handle is @_AlinaDuarte, AlinaDuarte. Alina Duarte. So it's @_AlinaDuarte. And then Telesur does a pretty good job. And then one last one who this guy works for Radio Casuchun is Oli Vargas.
Yeah.
I'm following him on Twitter. On Facebook or on Instagram. Those are just a list. There's so many, but if you get in touch with those, you know, they'll pull from other groups. So following them. Another thing is, you know, analyzing, you know, social media is such a, what a world social media is, right? Yeah. So much different things, so many different takes from different people that can really twist things up. So one thing I encourage all the listeners to do when you read about any transnational issues, definitely analyze and confront people who may appear to be left or try to pose as left or try to pose, you know, socialist or, you know, like freedom fighters, but are actually pushing neoliberal imperialist agenda.
Yeah, absolutely.
They like disguise what they're doing, and they'll typically disguise it under environmental rights or human rights. And, you know, elephant in the room is USAID, right? We can see how Trump's like used USAID as a tool, and that's like the biggest elephant. There's many, many elephants in the room that we can look at, but just kind of being careful, right? If something's called like the human rights blank blank blank, doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, they're going to be the best folks. So definitely doing your homework and analyzing that, digging a little deeper, signing petitions and letters that either we or any of the handles that, you know, you hopefully will follow so that's important. Looking at your, you know, representatives, where are you living? What are your representatives say? Have they signed anything? At the beginning of the coup, you know, there were some people, I forget which congressman there were exactly, but there were some resolutions, I believe, that were being passed around. And one of our members was actually lobbying. And then we found out that there was another bill or another resolution that was being either led by or supported by Tim Kaine in Virginia that supports the coup, or, you know, so I think he's a Democrat, right? So, like, and we already know the story about Democrats, but when it comes to that world, you know, we can see how lines can intertwine to make the vision really bright. So definitely analyzing and confronting people who just try to pose. Number two, following those social media handles. Number three, if you want to donate to us, you know, we're going to make sure that money goes into helpful hands over there. And I don't know if Mao or anyone else, if y'all have anything to add, but those are the things that I can think of And yeah, just, you know, staying sharp, stay a student.
Beautiful. That's really awesome. We'll probably put links to all that stuff like in the comments. T, did you want to say something quickly or no? I think we'll ask one more quick question before we wrap it up. Maybe we can go just through each of you. If there's one thing you want people listening to know about Bolivia or about the struggle in general, what would that be?
So how you can pass it off to you, Jose.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That, well, we just gotta keep supporting, and especially indigenous movements, and just try to unify with all the movements, like in up here in Latin America. That's gonna provide us the help that we need. There's a media blockade out in there too, so that's so the information doesn't come out. So it's like, that's why the other question was important, because we have done all that work when it comes to like researching the which media and which things, and it's like we're trying to make it easier for the rest of the population to be able to make the right decisions when it comes to what's going on over there.
For me, it's like, be wary of like the good message, you know, just because like someone says, hey, democracy, it doesn't mean their intentions aren't, you know, evil, you know, just, and basically like any critique and, you know, anything like that, while it might be, you know, justified or legitimate, it's not an invitation for literal Nazis to take over your government. And yeah. A lot of people, I think, forget that. So.
Yeah, definitely echoing all of that. For me, I would say, yeah, it definitely means like being rooted, right? And so like being rooted in the work means being rooted in the truth. When we want to find the truth, you know, we can always go to Pachamama. We can go to Mother Earth, because Mother Earth doesn't lie. And Mother Earth shares as much as she wants to share with us. So, you know, if we want to go to the truth, means being rooted. And being rooted sometimes means asking questions, and asking tough questions, not just of other people, but asking questions, tough questions of yourself. Yeah. Like, you know, for my relatives who may support the Áñez regime or maybe center, you know, ask yourself these questions of like, why do you support them? And why do you support them? And not just only why, but like, why did you not support like the previous like administration, or, you know, why aren't you like listening to like the people like who are being hurt right now? Why, like, just asking yourself why, like asking yourself those tough questions, like, am I a neoliberal? Am I a racist? Right? Like that's the thing. It's just like, I think that's one of the tough questions to ask, especially now in the context of, you know, the movement for Black Lives, right? We find a lot of white people now who are kind of like asking themselves these questions and maybe uncomfortable with those questions because of the responses in nature. So I ask those relatives to ask yourself these questions and allow yourself to grow. I know that was kind of a long answer, but.
Also try Sardinias.
What was that?
Try Sardinias. If you ever get a chance.
My closing thoughts to all of that, for all the viewers, is to follow these beautiful comrades on Twitter. Give them your goddamn money. Donate to them. I'm demanding this. If you are listening to this right now, give them your money. That is my final thought.
And can I throw out like a Cash App handle or something? Or should I do that?
Hell yeah, you can.
Absolutely.
So this Cash App handle we can use is the JUSTIS81. So just is 81. And I would share the Venmo, but I'm not sure which Venmo we're using as of now. But yeah, if you'd like to support, definitely, you know, we can always provide receipts to donors. You know, we got those. So appreciate everyone. Appreciate you.
Cool. Okay. Thank you all so much for coming on. Again, it was very much an honor and a pleasure, and have learned a lot. Definitely going to follow, look into a lot, especially those far right names. I'm curious about their connections to far right neo-Nazi elements in the United States. It would not surprise me if there are some connections there. But again, thank you so much. I hope we can do this again sometime soon. So, you know, keep up the struggle, keep the faith. And again, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, yuspagara hilatanaka. Thank you. Thank you, brothers. And then we'll see you up until next time.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. So he's going to say nothing but solidarity from us to y'all and to all the struggles around the world. Like, I'm here in Australia, so we can't forget about the indigenous struggles here as well, which are huge because, again, we all live on stolen land here as well. But echoing what the what Austin and T said, nothing but a pleasure, privilege of having you on. Everyone that listens to this, please, please, please check them out. Bolivia isn't just a headline. Bolivia is people. Bolivia is a real, real place with real, real issues. Some issues that a lot of you will never truly understand living in the core.
And one quick shout out to Piscataway Nation, you know, the lands that we're on here in the DMV, and yeah. Pamunkey Nation as well. You know, shout out to Chief Tayak over there.
That's huge. All right. If no one has anything else to say, we'll wrap it up there. And as usual, check us out. Follow us on Machete Mate. Check out these wonderful people. Thanks again, Jair, Mauricio, Jose Luis. Nothing but love from us. We'll catch you guys next time. Hasta la victoria.
Hasta la victoria.